You're listening to Health Justice Radio Collective on CFMU 93.3.
Hello, you're listening to the Health Justice Radio Collective on CFMU. Today, we're going to be talking about mental health with Dr. Sheila Harms. Last Friday, the International Women's and Children's Health Conference was held here in Hamilton. The conference was focused on Confronting the Stigma, a global and multicultural perspective on the mental health of women and children. Dr. Sheila Harms facilitated a workshop at the conference focusing on the grand challenges in global mental health. These grand challenges are those specific barriers which, if removed, would help to improve the lives of those affected by neuropsychiatric illnesses. The goal of identifying these challenges is to ultimately develop effective interventions. Dr. Sheila Harms is a child and adolescent psychiatrist working at McMaster Children's Hospital. She has a particular interest in marginalized populations and currently works with Hamilton's homeless youth as well as incarcerated youth to address mental health concerns. Her research has focused on conceptions of mental health in youth orphaned by HIV/AIDS in sub-Saharan Africa. So, Dr. Harms, can you tell us a bit about what you do here in Hamilton and also abroad?
Sure. So locally I work as a child and adolescent psychiatrist, and I have a position at McMaster which involves clinical responsibilities and academic. Mm-hmm. So I'm privileged to work both in the inpatient setting where it's a multidisciplinary team and there's high degree of acuity with kids who are quite unwell, so it's a fast-paced setting with lots of really unwell kids. And then in the community, I have the privilege of working with a number of community agencies, including Good Shepherd Services, some local facilities for incarcerated youth, and also some family health teams where I provide consultation to primary health care settings. So that would be local work that I do, so it's a nice mix. Then globally, I'm a member of the Canadian Coalition for Global Health Research, and it really just is a network of individuals who are interested in global health issues. And so the work that I do in that setting specifically is linked up to colleagues both in Zambia and in Uganda doing work around mental health policy and knowledge translation for kids and youth.
Okay. And is that how you got involved with the grand challenges in global mental health?
Mm-hmm. There's sort of a champion for global mental health, and his name is Vikram Patel, mm-hmm. and he's somebody that I have been in touch with, and through networking with him, he invited me to participate in the grand challenges.
Okay. Yeah. Okay, and just so for those who didn't come to the conference on Friday, could you tell us a little bit about the grand challenges in global mental health?
Sure. So there's probably some understanding that the context related to global mental health is one of a pretty dire situation, some pretty profound challenges with respect to access to treatment across the globe, mm-hmm. and some fairly disabling statistics around the impact of mental health disabilities. And so in response to that context, the National Institute for Mental Health decided that they would put together a consortium of individuals to try and prioritize and identify research priorities for the global community around global mental health issues. And so what that involved was an advisory board inviting different people to participate, mm-hmm. which included some researchers, some community advocates, some program implementers, and then clinicians to respond to a series of questions that really was just looking at what are the research priorities. And I was a part of that initiative.
And so at the International Women's and Children's Health Conference on Friday, you talked a little bit more about the results coming out of the grand challenges. Can you tell us a little bit more about the research priorities that came out?
So the research priorities that emerged were listed under broadly a topic of 25 grand challenges, but what they did was summarized five imminent priorities, and really they focus on early intervention and screening, scaling up of services, both psychosocial services and access to medications, looking more broadly at issues of policy and system development and training of health human resource capacity. And the one population of interest that they did name was increasing evidence-based services for children and youth in the global mental health setting.
Mm-hmm. That was different, right, from before, and that evidence-based care was not part of policy.
I think there's always been an attempt to understand what the evidence-based interventions are, but because mental health really hasn't been on anybody's radar,
right,
the discussion around mental health and how it fit into a primary care agenda was really exciting, and the fact that they named children in particular as a population, children and youth, was really exciting given the large numbers that they constitute across the globe and the potential for success as opposed to disability if early intervention could be accomplished.
Yeah, I think mental health is such an important issue, but it's often not addressed and not acknowledged as such.
Can you tell us a little bit more about what your role was in the grand challenges?
Mm-hmm. So there were about 600 invited and 422 responded, and of one group of individuals, I represented the clinician perspective, and basically was allowed to talk about my experiences both locally as a child psychiatrist and perhaps more importantly experiences that I've had working in sub-Saharan Africa with colleagues around the issues of child and adolescent mental health. And so the questions were similarly posed to everybody, and I could provide answers around my own unique perspective given the population and experiences that I had. So hopefully there was a part of my voice in the top five, identifying child and youth mental health as being a really important priority.
Yeah. Could we now talk a little bit more about your work in particular?
Sure.
With children and youth?
Mm-hmm.
So what kind of barriers do you think they are faced with in terms of receiving adequate care for their mental health?
Mm-hmm. Are we talking about kids and youth here in Canada or on a global perspective?
Let's talk about both.
Okay.
Yeah.
So in some ways, we're very fortunate in Canada in that there is an existing primary mental health care system, and there is an acknowledgement in Canada that children and youth have particular mental health needs that are important to be addressed, and they're critical to functional and developmental success. So there's buy-in across the board, I think, from the academics and the clinicians in Canada. However, access to care still remains a significant challenge. There's a pretty significant shortage of child and adolescent psychiatrists as well as trained mental health professionals. Having said that, I think that stigma continues to be a really important barrier. It's not a new idea. It's not novel, not a novel concept by any stretch of the imagination, but it certainly is a potent barrier to kids and youth and their families in Canada.
Mm-hmm.
And then access, depending on where you live in Canada, geographically, you're going to have a better chance of accessing services if you're in an urban setting as opposed to a rural setting where we know that access to any kinds of healthcare are going to be more challenging.
Mm-hmm.
Globally, the idea of children's mental health is, I think, in some ways quite a novel one from a clinical perspective. That hasn't really been on the map. And so the idea that mental health concerns in general are being addressed is a huge improvement. But I don't know that we're at the place where child and youth mental health is really on anybody's radar in a broad scale perspective.
Yeah. During the conference, you showed a picture of a young girl chained to a tree, possibly because of mental illness that she had, and that the best way for the family to deal with it at the time was maybe to make sure that she is safe.
Mm-hmm.
So how, like, in your opinion, what can be done in terms of helping families and children and youths in developing countries?
I think that starting from the perspective of wanting to learn and being yeah. open to understanding what the issues are is really critical. So I think I mentioned in that photograph that although it seems quite sensational, it mm-hmm. may be an interesting lens to apply to think about families doing the best that they can
yeah.
and thinking about safety and harm reduction or illness prevention by doing what they did, as strange as that seems with a child's leg being tied to a tree.
Mm-hmm.
In any event, I think the broader issue is coming at these kinds of dialogues or issues from an open perspective, recognizing people want to do the best that they can and
yeah.
are wanting to help their kids learn and grow. And that's a universal wish and dream.
Yeah.
So I think being able to start from that perspective and then thinking about what are the resources that are accessible, is there something that we can do differently or better, even in small increments, can be a starting place. With respect to global mental health, again, the access to services is really limited. So
yeah.
in some ways, it becomes a bit of a moot dialogue. But certainly here, there's all kinds of ideas and resources that can be discussed with families.
So coming back to coming back home into Hamilton, so what kind of things are you seeing in our community in your work
mm-hmm.
with youth and children?
I don't know that I would have the most balanced perspective, but
yeah.
I work, again, I have the privilege of working with homeless youth and street-involved
yeah.
youth, as well as youth who are in the youth detention systems or are incarcerated.
Mm-hmm.
And so I see young people who want to do the best that they can and
yeah.
who have abilities and resiliencies and strengths as well as challenges,
mm-hmm.
as do anybody else. I am seeing particular challenges related to homelessness that are distressing for these youth in a way that most of us probably wouldn't have experienced if you hadn't lived on the streets.
Mm-hmm.
And so being open to understand how those stressors and often accumulation of stressors can result in psychological distress and sometimes, frank, mental health disorders is
yeah.
important to be on the lookout for so that you can treat it
mm-hmm.
because they are treatable and there are possibilities to make things better.
Yeah. So what kind of stressors would lead to homelessness in youth? Like what kind of things have you encountered?
Mm-hmm. Some pretty common stories are long-standing patterns of conflict in the family home.
Okay.
And so conflict happens for all kinds of reasons.
Mm-hmm.
For example, if a youth has had long-standing learning difficulties in school,
yeah.
it may have been perceived or conceptualized as a child being lazy or not willing to do his or her best.
Mm-hmm.
And so in some ways, a learning problem may have been masked.
Right.
There's a lot of kids who have untreated ADHD. I know that it's a bit of a hot topic, but the idea of having poor impulse control
mm-hmm.
And not having a stop sign that comes up before you act can be a pretty major barrier to kids doing the best that they can. And so you add that into a family home that has financial stressors,
yeah.
That has pre-existing patterns of communication that result in conflict instead of understanding each other. You add on to that poor neighborhoods with poor resources,
yeah.
and there's a bit of a recipe for things to go badly instead of successfully.
Mm-hmm.
Having said that, these youth that I have met have incredible resiliencies and strengths, which is a pleasure to come alongside and
mm-hmm.
To be a part of that discovery.
Mm-hmm. And do you find, is it often that these youths sort of make their own decision in going onto the street, or is it that they just sort of that's their last resort and they don't really have a choice in the matter?
I think it's a combination of decisions. There's not really a hetero or a homogeneous story
right.
that results in homelessness. So,
and how is it that these youths
are able to see you and have access to your services once they're on the street?
Yeah, the Good Shepherd Agency in Hamilton is a really wonderful agency that is incredibly committed to homeless and street-involved youth. And they have a homeless shelter called Notre Dame House, and there's also a mental health residential facility called Brennan House.
Okay.
And there's a group of really impressive mental health clinicians and frontline workers that are a skilled set of individuals who I have the privilege of working with.
Mm-hmm.
And through this agency, we do collaborative work together in providing services to kids who are hoping to benefit from mental health intervention.
And from your experience, how have these homeless youths been dealing with their situation, both being homeless and also having a mental illness?
Yeah, the ones, so again, they come to these settings with an enormous skill set already.
Yeah.
And a lot of resiliency. So if they do learn anything or if there's a betterment, it's because it was already inside of them and
mm-hmm.
somebody had the opportunity perhaps to, like I said, to come alongside and maybe open a door that hadn't been opened prior. I have seen kids do extremely well. And again, we're using indicators of success that would be developmentally appropriate. So
okay.
things like getting a part-time job,
mm-hmm.
Being in a romantic relationship successfully,
right.
completing high school. Those are the same indicators that we're using. And I've seen lots of kids in this setting, I shouldn't say kids and teens do extremely well and have the same kinds of outcomes that you and I would hope for our siblings or for our family members.
Yeah, that's really wonderful to hear.
Mm-hmm.
To bring it closer to our listeners,
mm-hmm.
as students and mm-hmm. as community members, what do you think we can do to help directly or indirectly?
It's an excellent question.
Mm-hmm.
And while there may not be an obvious opportunity to dive in and get involved clinically, I do think that the idea of being open to learning
mm-hmm.
and developing an awareness about what we mean when we say mental health or mental illness,
yeah.
And to understand that we're not talking about a duality, we're not talking about an us versus them, that we're talking about a continuum of experiences and symptoms that in
yeah.
one setting may be normal and in another setting may pose a challenge in us being the best that we can be. So I think there, again, getting back to the issue of stigma, there's a huge amount of stigma that stops us from really understanding and taking out some of the fear
yeah.
And the insecurities related to the language in mental health.
Mm-hmm.
But just starting to have respectful dialogues, being open to learning and understanding a bit more about what we mean when we say mental health or mental illness, I think
yeah.
is a wonderful starting place.
Mm-hmm. How do we go about doing that? How do we go about learning more?
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, is there a way to have a chance to interact, or is it just approaching someone on the street, or is it?
Yeah, there's all kinds of ways that you can learn. There's all kinds of online resources. So Center for Addiction and Mental Health has some lovely resources.
Mm-hmm.
There's some, the American Academy of Child and Adolescent Psychiatry has some really fantastic online services or online educational materials.
Mm-hmm.
Thinking about different organizations around town, even the Department of Psychiatry at McMaster University would have links and educational resources to get informed.
Right.
But I think there's no better education than hearing a story or a narrative firsthand. And so I know for certain that the folks at Good Shepherd would welcome medical students or students from McMaster
yeah.
To come by and say, we're open to learning. We're open to finding out what you guys do and how you come alongside youth who may have mental health challenges.
Yeah. Are you finding that the psychosocial, physical kinds of therapy is as effective as medication that you might be offering?
I think one has to step back and figure out what it is you're offering treatment for.
Right.
And so coming from a medical background, we really only have research, which would be our best form of evidence. And so you look at the research, and research isn't only about medicines. It is about using psychosocial interventions such as talk therapy or meditation or exercise or getting back into a lifestyle that you had when you were healthy. Mm-hmm. So for me, it's more about being up to date on the information so that I can have a respectful and honest dialogue with the families and youth that I see to present the options to say, if we're talking about treating depression, for example, it's not only medicine. It's also about, like I said, meditation and perhaps talk therapy if that's a good fit for you, or exercise, or getting back into, let's say, a lifestyle that you didn't, that you used to have when you were healthy, and saying, you know, recognizing what you value at the current time, what you have energy for, what are the things that you might think would be helpful for you at this place and time.
Mm-hmm. And you mentioned working with the families as well. So it's a team-based thing.
Mm-hmm. As much as we can, we know that kids and teens exist in family systems, and that a team is always stronger if people are able to work together. That unfortunately isn't always the case.
Right.
But when that is a possibility, it certainly strengthens the initiative and gives us sort of a more of a security net, I suppose.
So what kind of challenges do you find that you're faced with at work in your field?
I think probably, again, stigma is a really big problem, both within my own profession and my own colleagues, but more broadly, even asking youth if they want to see a psychiatrist, will immediately the word shrink will pop into their head, and then the dialogue becomes about, well, I'm not crazy. And so that still is a barrier that is faced, and I think it's an understandable one, but one that we have to work hard to overcome. There really still remains a pretty profound shortage of services for, I'll talk about the kids and teens who are really unwell, who have a major mental illness, where facilities or settings such as the home or even group homes aren't going to be sufficient to care for their needs.
Right.
And I think back to the deinstitutionalization movement that happened in the 70s, which had a lot of underlying principles that were centered in patient respect and patient advocacy, but in some ways there's a hole that's been left in terms of how we care for the really seriously mentally ill that can't be maintained in their homes. So that has at times been a pretty significant barrier.
So what's out there right now for these youths who are very ill?
There are acute care settings like the McMaster Child and Youth Mental Health Inpatient Program, which is one of the settings in which I work. And then short of that, there are emergency services, but there really isn't anything in between that would be a sort of a secure setting except for secure treatment places like SILAPS through CNARC or youth detention facilities, which seems like a fairly dramatic dichotomy.
Yeah. So we've been talking about stigma and how mental illness is often not talked about because of it. How would you suggest we can think or start to think about mental illness in a different way?
I'm not sure if I mentioned this before, but I had a professor who reminded all of us that abnormality is cut from normal cloth, and the idea that that most human beings find themselves with many more strengths and resiliencies than they do issues related to illness or disability, and to recognize that that's the starting point, and there's lots of hope in those narratives and dialogues if we want to find them. So it's being able to look for those kernels of possibility and change, because they're there in psychiatry, and it's an exciting time and an exciting field to work in.
Because we often talk about mental illness, right, and not the healthy part that is part of our mental picture as well. So, Dr. Harms, thank you so much.
You're most welcome. It's my privilege.
We hope that you continue to do good work.
Thank you.
In psychiatry. Thank you so much.
We're going to end today's show with two songs by Amelia Curran. She's a Canadian singer-songwriter born in St. John's, Newfoundland. Here is The Mistress and Bye Bye Montreal.
Hello, it's me, the mistress. Is there anybody home? 'Cause the last place I should be is sitting here alone. All I ask for is forgiveness. If you've got some, give it here. You don't act much like you need it. You don't look much like you care. And will you need me in the summer? Will you need me in the spring? I believe my life is ending. I don't know where to begin. I've got a page in my back pocket of the seven deadly sins, and it's dragging me around among the needles and the pins. And I don't need to take a breather. I'm on the outside looking out. Yeah, I don't need to see your papers, 'cause I know what you're about. You had me by the Bible, and you had me by the belt, and you had me from the instant my cold love began to melt. And then you praised me for my inspiration, asked me for an explanation, followed up with hesitation, fit my primal expectation. I don't care, but I don't mind. You can call me anytime. You can holler through the fortress and kick me out of line. I don't expect it from the grief that gathers in my head. I like suspended disbelief. I like to spend the day in bed. I like to spend the nights in heaven hanging with the dead. You know, Judas and his women and the voices in my head. I've got my eyes upon the mirror, got my hands up in the air. I confess to my distress. Yeah, I get crazier each year, and I'd change it if I could. You know that I like to say that I would, but there's a war between the parts of me, the evil and the good. And you try and stop me, I'm on fire. It doesn't look that way, you know. I used to be a liar. The living set me straight, and I don't come with no disclaimer. I'm like everybody else. We keep our demons on the burner and our morals on the shelf, and nobody asks for my opinion because you don't want to hear it. I swear I'm only human, wishing I could disappear. You must think it's an illusion that I like to live in fear of a probable solution. Why the devil put me here, and now no judgment call will kill me. Just makes me close my eyes, and I sink into the slumber, to the prison of my mind, where I'd love to introduce you. If you found a way inside, you could sell me retribution and totally demystify, until I wonder how I got here, until I don't know who to be. Is it better to be grounded? Is it better to be free? Am I better off without you? Am I happier alone? Hello, it's me, the mistress. Could you please pick up the phone? Now that your darling keeps you home, there goes the best war we've ever had. Now that nobody's all alone, we'll turn forgiveness to forget. If you're in town, you'll look me up. We'll dance the days into the cups. And you will talk of golden rivers flowing, giving you enough.